You're listening to the Hog Sports Network Daily Podcast. Now, here's your host, Matt Jones.
And happy Wednesday to you. We appreciate you being with us. We've got a big show lined up for you today. Jason Watson, the Arkansas volleyball coach, sitting here with me at the desk. We'll talk to him about his team a little bit later. We'll have Anthony Christensen in studio to talk about the SEC basketball schedule that was released on Tuesday. And we'll end the show with a conversation with Kendall Rogers of D1Baseball.com about all of the things going on in college baseball this offseason. It's been a busy offseason for that sport. But first, Coach Watson, we appreciate you being here.
Oh, cheers. I appreciate the opportunity.
You know, so your volleyball team, I feel like the perception of Arkansas volleyball in the last year has grown exponentially. You go from, you know, having some success to being in the Elite Eight, and it just feels like the excitement about your volleyball team has really grown in the last year. I mean, from your seat, what have you seen?
Yeah, I think, you know, getting to host the first and second rounds of the NCAA tournament, and then not only hosting, but to be one of the top five sites in terms of attendance is a remarkable thing. And while we've had a passionate group of volleyball fans, I think we're seeing Razorback athlete fans in general become volleyball fans. And so that's a remarkable thing for us. And I think Barnhill in and of itself, lots of people have ties to Barnhill, memories of Barnhill Arena. But to see a team that close in action that you can do in Barnhill, I think sort of resonates with our fan base a little bit. It's an exciting sport, I think. I'm biased, but I think there's a lot of enthusiasm about our sport in general right now.
I mean, you mentioned the Razorback fans. That's kind of the unique things about Arkansas is that they don't necessarily have to be a volleyball fan. They don't have to be a softball fan. If one of those teams are doing well, people come out and they flock and they support you. And I would think that's got to be very rewarding.
It's wonderfully rewarding, not only for me, but for the athletes, you know, that they feel supported. I mean, they're working just as hard as any other group of athletes on campus.
So you start the season ranked number 19 in the preseason poll. I read that you told Paul Boyd the other day that it's fun for a minute to talk about the polls, and then you kind of have to move on. But, you know, to get that kind of recognition, especially because you lost some really good players, Maggie Cartwright, Taylor Head, Jill Gillen's gone. You lost some players who had been really integral to your success, but still to have that type of recognition in the preseason, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think it's nice. I think it's, as you said, a reflection upon probably where we've been over the last couple of years. And now we have a chance to write the next chapter with another group of pretty talented athletes. They may not be as experienced as we've lost, but they're certainly talented, and so I think they're excited for this challenge.
You do get Jill Gillen back as an assistant coach. I wonder, how did that come about, and what do you think that she can add to your staff?
Yeah, I mean, there's certainly some experience there, you know, as we're trying to get our core group of hitters to understand the challenges of the game. I mean, she's been there and done that, and you know, she's in this little transition phase. You know, she goes back to play in the pro leagues in December, and so she was just kind of hanging out. And what a great place for her to hang out is be back in our gym helping our athletes.
How does she? And I know this, you'll cross this bridge when you get there. But when she does play professionally in December, January, February, what is her role as an assistant coach during those times?
Yeah, I don't know if there is a role at that point in time. I think she goes and she plays, and we'll see where this takes us. But for now, it's just phenomenal for all of us to have her back in the gym.
Jill was a four-time All-SEC player for you. Mentioned you lost Taylor Head, transferred to Florida State. Maggie Cartwright graduated. You do get Hannah Hogue back, though, and she was an honorable mention All-American for you last year. I think I read that she had the second most assists of any hitter last season in Division I. Been great for you, obviously. Yeah. And I would think, though, that now those three are gone, how does she elevate maybe into, like, leadership role and just leading your team this year?
Yeah, I mean, by virtue of her position, you know, she's going to play an instrumental role in that for us. And with that comes some leadership opportunities for her. She's not quite as outwardly in a way about doing some stuff, but she certainly gives us an enormous amount of direction during the play, and kind of keeps us keeps the river in the banks a little bit, if you will, as we move through it. But she is a remarkable student athlete. I mean, she, if you think of what a student athlete should look like, I think it would be Hannah Hoge.
You get Romani Thurman, and people are going to know that last name because her dad is Scotty, the former Razorback basketball player who coaches down at Parkview now. She spent her freshman season at North Carolina. Did you recruit her out of high school? And what was the process like to get her back here?
Yeah, everybody recruited her out of high school, you know, and we were in that mix. And so when she went in the transfer portal, it seemed like that was an easy thing for us to kind of get in on. And luckily for us that, you know, second time's a charm. And and so she's here in the gym. And to her credit, I feel like she's been here forever, you know, and I think she's just integrated herself in really well with what we're trying to do.
I've heard coaches talk before about when you're recruiting players, you want to leave, even if they don't commit to you at high school, you really want to leave that relationship with a good note, because with the way things are now, you may end up recruiting them again somewhere down the road. I mean, how often do you see that?
Yeah, I think we see it a little bit more, I think. Okay. And so I think you're right. I think you're absolutely right. I mean, if we're true to who we are and what we're about, then, you know, we'll leave every recruiting relationship on good terms.
Let's talk about patience and building a program, because there was a lot of that with you at Arkansas. There were some lean years, but it seemed like every year you kind of built a little bit more on the year before, and the administration, they continue to show you support, and then it pays off last year. You said that you didn't do anything different last year. It's just a byproduct of just continually, you know, doing things the way that you believe in. Kind of take us through that and program building, because it's not that way a lot of times. And you know, I mean, especially in a lot of sports, that you get that kind of time to build your program the way you have.
Yeah, it's not an easy process, I think, in any sport. But certainly for me, it took some time, but recruiting in our world is slightly different than most. I mean, it's so accelerated that we are now working on the class of 2027. So, so you know, the fruits of your recruiting you don't see until you're in your second or third year, and you know, patience is a rare commodity in athletics, and with everybody, and I just feel incredibly fortunate that that both Jeff Long and then Hunter Juracek granted me that patience to be able to do what it is that I knew I could do here at Arkansas. You know, there were some dark days, of course, but we managed through it, and but it's been fun.
I was talking to Colby Hill one time about, you know, the soccer program that he's built, and there was a core of players, Haley Van Fossen, Parker Goins, Taylor Malum, from the Tulsa area, who really believed in his vision early. And I think they committed to him as sophomores. But Arkansas soccer was not what it is now. It wasn't anywhere close to that. I wonder how much of that did you see in your program building, that, you know, you had a core of players who believed in something you were selling them, but maybe they hadn't seen it on the court yet.
Yeah, I think what we were selling is to these athletes, when you look at a Taylor Head and a Jill Gill and a Maggie Cartwright and even a Hannah Hoge for that matter, we were selling the fact that we're going to give you a chance, that Arkansas is going to give you a chance where nobody else probably would in the role in which you have. And so I think that enabled them to stay together, you know. When things aren't going well, lots of people head to the portal, but they didn't, and that's a credit to them.
I've heard a lot about the camaraderie between head coaches on campus, that, you know, say Courtney Dyfel wins an SEC softball championship, she comes back and almost every head coach on campus has sent her a text message, same with other coaches in other sports. Speak to that a little bit and what that's like, because I don't know that that's maybe common on campuses, or maybe it is.
I think it's unique for me. Okay. I think one of the things that I think is wonderful is that the success of other programs doesn't threaten your own success. Mm. And so the rising tide, I think, is rising all of the ships. I mean, we're an incredibly competitive group of coaches that, but we're not competitive within that cadre of coaches on campus. Mm-hmm. We generally want to see each other succeed. And I think that's from the top down, you know, we don't see a tiering of sports at Arkansas where some are resourced at a level better than others. And so we all have an opportunity to go be the best versions of ourselves. And I think that's what any coach wants, you know.
Whether it be coaches or whether it be athletes, when you see other teams having success, is there a little bit of a motivation to say, hey, I want some of that?
Yeah, you know, you want to add to the party, mm-hmm. you know, you don't want to take away from it. But again, when you are having those seasons and moments in your season, you know, there are ups and downs, there are peaks and valleys. But there are always people there to support you and lift you up who have been there before, mm-hmm. you know, who have been there before.
As you're making this run through the tournament last year, you beat Kentucky in the Sweet 16. You played Nebraska very competitively in that round of eight where you ended up your season losing. But as you're going through that, and you mentioned hosting the games at Barnhill, do you have a sense in that moment of what this really means for your program, like long-term? Or are you so locked into the moment that maybe you're not focused on all the peripheral?
Yeah, I mean, I think you're doing your job, mm-hmm. right? You're doing your job, and part of it is to compartmentalize everything that you're experiencing in that moment. But after that Kentucky win to get to the round of eight, there was a moment where you look to the stands. Mm-hmm. Nebraska played before us, so mm-hmm. it pretty much emptied out by the time we got done with playing Kentucky. And there is this large contingent of Razorback fans. And that contingent of Razorback fans that were in attendance in Lincoln was larger than what we had my first year in Barnhill. And so that's a really wonderful moment for me. And it comes as no surprise that Razorback fans are okay at driving up to Nebraska. You know, they go mm-hmm. for Omaha and things like mm-hmm. that. But for them to come up to Lincoln for a volleyball match is pretty special.
Just kind of going over some of the, you know, the things you guys did last year. 28 wins. It was the most for the program since 1999. Back-to-back NCAA tournaments for you for the first time since 2012 and 13. First time you got to the second round of the NCAA tournament since 98 and 99. How do you put that kind of historic season behind you now? For the players who are back, how much of the offseason was spent saying, okay, that's over, let's get our focus moving forward?
Yeah, a significant amount, I think. Mm. You know, that's done, that chapter's done, you know, and now it's up to us to write the next chapter. And what is that going to look like? And the goal is the same. The goal is to get to the tournament, and then once we get there, to stay as long as we can. And so those goals haven't changed, but the personnel have changed, and, you know, we've got to figure some things out.
You finished second in the SEC last year. As you try to climb that mountain in the SEC, it got a lot steeper with Texas coming in, a two-time reigning national champion, great program. What did they add to the SEC, and what does the conference look like as a whole this year?
Yeah, volleyball within the SEC until Kentucky won during COVID was the only sport in the SEC that hadn't won a national championship. Mm. And so we look at Texas coming in clearly, and even Oklahoma for that matter. And mm-hmm. Vandy's going to have volleyball starting in 2025.
Okay.
And so what we're seeing is the mean level of play in the SEC continuing to rise and meet probably the level that other sports have experience in the SEC when you look at football and basketball and softball and baseball. You know, mm-hmm. I think volleyball's the next sport across the country within the SEC to rise to that level of, you know, night in and night out competition. So it's exciting. I think some people may see it's somewhat daunting to get Texas in, you know, mm-hmm. but I think it's only great for the conference.
I want to ask you a couple of questions about this year's team. I wanted to go back, though, to something. Ethan Westerman wrote this a couple, 3 months ago. When the recruiting period opened for the high school juniors, mm-hmm. now, you said you're not a midnight crew. You said that a lot of times coaches will reach out to athletes at midnight when they're allowed to, when, you know, it becomes permissible. You said you wait until the next morning. You schedule some calls. Just kind of take us through that philosophy.
Yeah, I'm old, so I don't want to stay up that late. But two, we want to always be respectful of this process. And we think mm-hmm. recruiting is this long, drawn-out process that's mm-hmm. relationship-based, at least it is for us, and not at all pressure-based. And we feel pretty confident that what we can offer a recruit at Arkansas is on par with what they can get anywhere. And we don't feel the need to rush it. We don't feel the need to pressure kids. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we take our time. And part of that, too, I think, is we want to get the right people in the right seats on the bus. Mm-hmm. And that's a big part of it for us.
You have Missouri State on Thursday night in an exhibition game up in Springfield. You start your season the following week by going to California and playing a few times. What are you hoping to see Thursday night, and what's the process look like between now and the season opener?
Yeah, for the last 2 years, we've had a pretty consistent group of six or seven athletes that are playing, and now mm-hmm. with the loss of three pretty significant pieces, you know, we're trying to figure out where those pieces are. So we're going to use Thursday night to look at a lot of different things to see if we can figure out what we're going to do when we open up the following weekend. But there's healthy competition in our gym. There always has been, but there's some healthy questions that still need to be answered. So mm-hmm. we're trying to get some direction.
You mentioned that as you went around the summer, you could just feel a different level of interest, not only in your program, but maybe in the sport, around the area, around the state.
Yeah, easily. I think what's remarkable is in the 9 seasons I've been at Arkansas that the amount of exposure that the sport in general has gotten within the state, mm-hmm. And then with that, the amount of exposure our student athletes have. It's difficult at times for people to get to Barn Hill. Our schedule's not overly conducive to that. Mm-hmm. But they're watching and they're following. I mean, they're following you and what you're doing on behalf of us. They're following on ESPN and ESPN Plus and the SEC Network, and they're watching and they have their favorite volleyball players. And to see that growth of our athletes being role models, if mm-hmm. you will, for athletes that are playing volleyball within the state of Arkansas, it's just remarkable.
Coach, we appreciate you joining us, and best of luck to you this season.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you to Jason Watson, the Arkansas volleyball coach. When we come back, Anthony Christensen will be on the desk as we talk about the Razorbacks basketball schedule. But first, a word from our sponsors.
LPGA Week in Northwest Arkansas returns September 23rd through the 29th for the 18th consecutive year. Watch former Razorbacks and 2024 Olympians Maria Fassi and Gabby Lopez compete against the world's best female golfers at the Walmart Northwest Arkansas Championship, presented by P&G at Pinnacle Country Club in Rogers. The NWA Championship is so much more than a golf tournament, with something for everyone to enjoy and activities for fans of all ages. Daily tickets are only $10, and kids 17 and under get in free with a ticketed adult. Get your tickets today at nwachampionship.com. At Kendall King, we're proud of over 4 decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design, with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are design.
And welcome back. We appreciate you being here now with Anthony Christensen of WholeHogSports.com. The SEC announced the basketball schedule for men's basketball in 2024-25 on Tuesday. So now we know all of Arkansas's dates, at least for conference games. We're getting there. I think we've got about maybe 3 games and 5 dates left to figure out on this 24-25 schedule. But the first season with John Calipari at the helm of Arkansas, and obviously the headline, Anthony, is that he's going back to Rupp Arena on February 1st. We knew that they were going back to Kentucky. The SEC some time ago had mentioned who the opponents were going to be and where you were going to be playing the opponents, but now we have the date. Mm-hmm. It'll be February 1st, 2025. Don't have a time or anything yet. I'm sure CBS will get in on televising this thing, but that's when John Calipari's going to go back to Kentucky. A couple of things that are interesting about that: Arkansas comes off of a bye. They don't play the midweek before they go to Kentucky. And that's a weekend where there's no NFL games. That's the weekend before the Super Bowl, after the conference championship games. So I would have to think that that's going to be one of, if not the big, sporting event of the weekend.
And I wouldn't be surprised if that was by design. Yeah, just because of how big of a draw it is. Obviously, Calipari going back to Kentucky, 15 years in the same place, a lot of success. And then obviously near the end, a lot of people criticizing him for, over-reliance on freshmen or in-game tactics and whatnot. But it'll be a lot of fun. I'm sure he'll get a nice reception at Rupp Arena. It'll be, you know, I guess a homecoming. He's still, you know, has a lot of love for Kentucky, as he's talked about a lot since he left. And I'm happy that it's coming off an Arkansas bye week, because then I'll get to, hopefully I'll get to go down to Lexington. I've got some cousins who live there who I still need to ask if I can stick around with them for a little bit. So if Brittany and Kristen, if you're watching, can I stay with you guys for a little while?
We'll pay for your hotel, man. But I'm interested to see what kind of reception he gets. I was there, Lord, this has been 17 years ago almost, when John Pelfrey went back as Arkansas's coach and got a huge ovation. I mean, this is a guy who they love. Calipari, you know, it's like, I think the Kentucky fans largely are glad he's gone. I mean, I think both sides, you could just kind of feel like, you know, that arrangement had run its course. But I wonder if there's like some animosity that, okay, he left and we didn't get to send him packing. He left on his own volition and went to a conference rival. Mm-hmm. And now, you know, you've got Arkansas that's right there with a couple of other programs that's going to be challenging Kentucky for superiority in the SEC. I'm very interested to see when that game comes along, what kind of reception he gets.
Mm-hmm. And I imagine, I'm still imagining it's going to be, you know, a positive reception, just because, I mean, the guy spent 15 years there, won a national title, however many Final Fours, Elite Eights, you know, a lot of success at the same place. And, you know, he's always had glowing remarks to say about Kentucky,
mm-hmm.
you know, the bluest of blue, as he likes to call it, which is, you know, a factual statement in my mind. So I would imagine it would be a positive reception, at least pregame. Obviously, you know, when the game is going, people like to, you know, root on their teams. So I imagine, you know, there will be a nice pregame reception for him whenever he comes out. Just because, obviously, you know, he's a Hall of Famer,
mm-hmm.
Won a national title at Kentucky and had, you know, a ton of success in his 15 years there.
15 seasons at Kentucky. He says coaching in Kentucky is like dog years. So 15 seasons is feels like a whole lot more.
Yeah.
Arkansas, they play a couple of games. So they get Kentucky, where Kentucky plays in the midweek before. I think Kentucky might play Tennessee that midweek before they play Arkansas. But there are a couple of instances where Arkansas plays a team coming off of a bye. The week before the Kentucky game, actually, they go to OU, and OU will be coming off of a bye. The first time that Arkansas has played over at Lloyd Noble in quite some time. And then they get Alabama in Bud Walton Arena coming off of a bye on a weekend. And so kind of interesting to see how that works, you know, both ways.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I not to correct you, I think the Oklahoma game is at Bud Walton. I believe it is.
Okay.
But
maybe I looked that wrong. Go ahead.
But, you know, it is interesting. I mean, the rest factor is obviously a big thing, you know, in basketball and in really in any sport. And then obviously kind of looking at, you know, the on-paper rosters, you know, Oklahoma probably isn't going to be as strong as Arkansas coming into the season. Mm. Not to say that it's, you know, not possible that, you know, things could flip. Obviously, I'm a big Porter Moser fan,
mm-hmm.
You know, getting Loyola to the Final Four and having the success he's had there. And then being, you know, pretty steady at Oklahoma, I think he's a very good coach. The one that, you know, kind of coming off a bye is Alabama. That one can be a little worrisome with the, because I mean, if I had an AP preseason vote, which I do not, so I mean, if first off, if anybody from the AP is watching and wants to give me a vote, you know, I'm open to it, but. If I had a vote, I would probably put Alabama at number one. I mean, you look at the roster they've got coming back. You know, Mark Sears running the point again. You know, consensus All-American in my eyes. You know, the guy for a team that was on the Final Four last year. You know, that Alabama team's going to have a lot of talent, and to have them coming off a bye, you know, that'll be an interesting one. And then there's also obviously the case that, you know, sometimes the team plays better when they have that midweek game, mm-hmm. and. You know, whatnot, but yeah, that's yeah.
You are correct. The Oklahoma game the week before Kentucky is in Fayetteville. If you want an AP vote, you can see if you can get Bob Holt to retire. Bob's got our state's AP vote. Home and homes this year, there's three of them. You know, there have been three for a long time, or maybe there were five actually at one point. I think it was three, and then there were five when they expanded to the 18-game schedule. But this year it's Missouri. It's LSU, you know, keeping a couple of long rivalries in place. And then Texas will be a home-and-home opponent for this season only. Texas will not be a home-and-home opponent every year, but I'm sure people will love to see those two teams play twice in Texas' first year in the SEC.
Yeah, Texas is an interesting one. I like the roster that they've put together. I'm a big fan of Julian Larry from Indiana State. They should have a fun offense, you know, kind of with him running the point or, mm-hmm. you know, coming off the bench if, you know, they feel that he's kind of that six-man role. Texas should be an interesting one. Obviously, I believe it was 2 years ago they made the Elite Eight and then still, I can't remember how they did in the tournament this past year.
They lost to Tennessee.
Yes, correct. But, you know, a couple of years in a row where they've had, you know, some tournament success. And I'm a fan of the roster they've got. And, you know, going to Austin, you know, knock on wood that I get to do that. we'll see. It'll be a fun trip. Obviously, it's a, you know, a rivalry that, you know, kind of spans back a long way.
Mm-hmm.
So that'll be fun. And then Missouri and LSU as well. Obviously, those are the two longtime rivals. You know, Missouri is a nice one for me because it's not far from my parents' house and also my alma mater. But, you know, those are going to be some good games. I mean, Missouri should be much improved, which I know isn't saying anything, given they lost every SEC game last season. But they brought in some strong transfers. I mean, you look at Mark Mitchell and, you know, the transfer class they brought in, and LSU should be, you know, well improved as well. So I mean, those all have, you know, their own unique challenges, and you know, should be all good games in their own right.
The, you know, one other thought on Calipari going back to Kentucky. There are a lot of instances like this where you've got coaches who are going to coach against their old team in the SEC. You got Calipari, Arkansas, and Kentucky. Bruce Pearl, Auburn, and Tennessee. Rick Barnes, now that Texas is in the league, with Tennessee and Texas. Mike White, Georgia and Florida. So, I don't know, it's kind of interesting how that works out. I want to talk real quick, too. CBS Sports put out a poll, or they put out a story earlier this week. They surveyed a lot of different college basketball coaches, granted them anonymity, for saying, you know, who were the big hires of the offseason? Give some thoughts on different hires. Calipari was the runaway winner in this. He got about 43% of the vote. Dusty May was second with just under 22%. And Mark Pope at Kentucky was third with 8.5% of the vote in terms of who were the biggest hires of the offseason, the most blockbuster hire, if you will. And it's no surprise that Calipari won this. And I'm almost a little surprised that he didn't win this by more, because it's just shocking to see a coach who's a Hall of Famer, who's won a national championship, where he is, leave that school for, I mean, no offense to Arkansas, but it is a step down from Kentucky. It's not going to be a step down when Calipari's the coach. Mm-hmm. It's going to be right there on par with it. But perception-wise, Arkansas is a step down from Kentucky. It's just a shocking, shocking hire that, as we are 4 months removed from it happening, it's still kind of surprising and maybe a little hard to get your arms around.
Yeah, still kind of getting used to seeing Calipari wearing red. Instead of blue. But I mean, mentioning, you know, obviously I think just about any job bar, you know, UCLA or Kansas is going to be a step down from Kentucky. So anything like that. But when you're able to hire, you know, a guy who's in the Hall of Fame, who's won a national title, who's done everything that John Calipari's done, I think obviously it's going to be, you know, pretty well received, you know, not just for the fan base who gets, you know, that hire, but also just kind of nationally as well. And you mentioned, obviously, Dusty May and Mark Pope are the next guys on that list. I mean, those are two guys that, you know, we're going to see on that schedule as well, with the Michigan game at Madison Square Garden, which will be a lot of fun. And obviously the Kentucky game at Rupp.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, yeah, there's going to be a lot of a fun matchups kind of on this men's basketball schedule.
Not in the top six, but somewhere in the top 13 was Eric Musselman to Southern Cal on this list. They they listed the top six with their percentages, and then they listed the next seven in alphabetical order. Musselman is in that next group somewhere. Mm-hmm. I wonder if Musselman would have been in the top six had Calipari not taken the job at Arkansas, because it created a little, you know, I mean, obviously it created two of these hires that are in the top three with he and Mark Pope. Mm-hmm. Musselman to Southern Cal, I don't know, I felt like maybe that would get a little bit more traction. kind of interested to see him not as high.
Yeah, no, and it is an interesting, you know, move for Eric Musselman. I mean, he's brought in a good transfer class. That USC team, you know, is good on paper. I'm intrigued to see how they do with the, you know, the travel in the Big Ten. Obviously, mm-hmm. it's going to be mm-hmm. NBA-esque just because, I mean, I haven't looked at the Big Ten schedules if they're out yet or anything along those lines. But, I mean, you're going, you know, from Los Angeles to Rutgers and in New Jersey. So, I mean, it's going to be interesting to see how, you know, those, you know, runaway Pac-12 teams are going to do in the new look Big Ten. So I'm intrigued to see that. But I mean, that USC team on paper, it looks like it's going to be a good team, going to have some good offense as well. I mean, you got a good post presence in Josh Cohen, which we know a little bit about from his few days committed to Arkansas.
Mm-hmm.
And then you've got some good shooters on that team as well. So it'll be an interesting, you know, team to watch. But, you know, I do kind of agree that, you know, when a coach like Eric Musselman, having the success he had at Arkansas, goes to a, you know, a place like USC, which, you know, not to, you know, disrespect USC or anything, but is kind of the little brother program in terms of men's basketball in Los Angeles, just because, I mean, UCLA has won however many national titles. I think it's 11. You know, it's going to be an interesting dynamic to look at, but that USC team is good.
We want to tell you, you can stay on top of all Razorback sports with a digital subscription to the Hogs Illustrated app that gives you complete access to our website at wholehogsports.com, where you can read all of Anthony's basketball work. Our website includes breaking news, commentaries, analysis, features, recruiting with Richard Davenport, award-winning photography, premium message boards. Check it out at hogsillustrated.com/subscribe, or you can call 479-684-5509. I want to tell you, too, that our podcast is going to be a little bit different tomorrow. Sam Pittman is speaking Wednesday at the Hogs Illustrated Sports Club, and we will replay our Q&A with Sam Pittman as our podcast tomorrow, so be sure to check back tomorrow to hear Coach Pittman's thoughts on his Razorback football team. Anthony, we appreciate you being here. When we come back, we'll have Kendall Rogers from D1Baseball.com to talk about Razorback baseball and college baseball at large. But first, a word from our sponsors.
Taste, sip, sample, and discover the very best restaurants and chefs Northwest Arkansas has to offer at the Bite Experience at the LPGA, a unique culinary experience on site at the Northwest Arkansas Championship. Tickets are available Friday, September 27th through Sunday, September 29th, offering access to the best golf viewing and food and beverage samples from over 30 local restaurants. You don't want to miss this. Tickets are available for $45 a day. Get yours before they sell out at BiteNWA.com. At Kendall King, we're proud of over four decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design, with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are design.
Thank you for being with us. I want to tell you about Bentonville Glass, serving its community since 1971. Bentonville Glass is committed, professional, and versatile. If you're looking for a quality leader in Northwest Arkansas or looking for skilled craftsmanship, choose Bentonville Glass for all your glass market needs with the highest quality products. You can find them at 507 South Main in Bentonville or online at bentonvilleglass.com. Kendall Rogers is the managing editor of D1Baseball.com, and he joins us now. Always a pleasure to talk to you, Kendall. Lots of items this offseason. It feels to me like this is the most newsworthy offseason in all the years that I've covered college baseball.
Yeah, it's really interesting. It's funny. People think that, you know, once the College World Series ends, I get some time off. And this is the one year that I really didn't get much time, or at least I didn't get time off for about a month because, you know, after the College World Series ended, literally 24 hours later, you have the A&M Texas drama with Jim Schlossnagle leaving A&M for Texas. So that took about 2 or 3 weeks to finalize. And then, you know, all the roster limits and stuff like that, the scholarship news coming from the House settlement starts to trickle out. And so, actually right now it's pretty slow as we get ready for fall ball. But, you know, I'll take it with the way, you know, early July was for me on the college baseball beat.
You live down there in the middle of it. Has the A&M Texas stuff cooled off at all?
For the time being, You know, it's one of those things. If I had a magic wand, I would definitely move that series in the spring from Austin to College Station.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that series is going to be intense because I think, you know, obviously A&M is going to be really good next year. I think Texas will actually be sneaky good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that series will still be intense in Austin. But can you imagine if that series is in College Station next year with, you know, what could potentially be a number one A&M team? It would be outrageously crazy. So, you know, that rivalry was already a big deal. As we saw in the regional this past year, I mean, the intensity in that building was crazy. Then you throw this into it, it's pretty fascinating. You
know, the engineers at A&M, they could rebuild College Station in a month probably. We saw what they did with Kyle Field. Are they gonna have Bluebell renovated by the time Texas comes in?
No. So they're gonna start that at the end of next season. That's the other thing. Not to get on the path of this drama, but that's the other thing that's kind of interesting is, you know, one of the reasons that he left was because he thought they were kind of dragging their feet on the ballpark construction, and right now it's like they're kind of rejuvenated a little bit. You know, they're obviously, as we saw in the transfer portal. You know, they were able to keep all their guys. I mean, some of that was they like Mike Early. The other part of it, which is probably the most important part of it, is the fact that they had a robust NIL operation, as we've seen at Arkansas with their NIL. So they've got a lot of donors that are willing to pretty much give anything to get that ballpark going, if anything, just to prove a point.
We'll talk about the Razorbacks here in just a second, but one more talk about SEC ballpark. You've got Auburn, A&M, OU, Vandy, and Tennessee have all talked about renovating their ballparks sometime in the near future. Where are those renovations right now, and how soon can we expect to see any of these modifications to the SEC parks?
Yeah, so Auburn's actually in the middle of theirs right now. It's actually kind of an interesting look. If you go look at their pictures they posted on their Twitter feed, it looks a little discombobulated, but I mean, they're doing a lot of things on the right field line. They're, you know, they're not reconfiguring too much of their ballpark. So it's, you know what it kind of reminds me of? If you've ever seen Davenport at Virginia, how it's just kind of a hodgepodge of different things here and there. That's kind of the way Auburn's is. Tennessee's, I don't know if you saw this the other day, but Tennessee's actually got postponed for a year because I guess when they were moving utilities, they ran into a lot of issues. And so they've actually just like halted their renovations, and they're doing it next season. So, you know, they have Ole Miss. You know, we talk about the current we'll talk about the current climate of college athletics here in a minute, but I mean, you know, Ole Miss was supposed to do what, about a $10-12 million renovation, and it got put on hold because they're putting all their money in football NIL. So it's just, you know, you just never know in college baseball right now. The one constant that we do know is that Arkansas is always doing something to bomb.
Yeah, it feels like Ole Miss is doing something down at Swayze most of the time, too. You know, Hunter Yurecek, Arkansas's AD, has talked about this, not in baseball terms, but Bud Walton Arena is kind of scheduled to get a makeover at some point, or at least it was. Soccer at Arkansas, softball at Arkansas, too. They've had some renovations that they've put on hold because basically they're wanting to have the cash on hand when they start the renovation, as opposed to, you know, taking out loans and selling the bonds and building these stadiums the way they used to do it. I think it might slow things down some, even though some of these are planned in the SEC.
There's no doubt. I mean, the thing is, 5 years ago, you could sit there and put together kind of a financial payout plan on a ballpark or a stadium. And, you know, with bonds and things like that, you could go, okay, yeah, we'll pay this thing over 15 years. The problem now is, you know, I don't think they need all cash in hand. But the problem you run into now is, I mean, if all these things, you know, with the back pay and now that you're about to be paying players, you know, straight out of the athletic department budget, when you have those things at play, like if you're Hunter Yurecek, like you have no idea how much you're going to be paying in 5 years. So you don't want to put yourself in a situation where you're paying for a softball stadium renovation or construction in 20 years when you may be paying players $1 million per player in 5 years. Like, I don't think that'll happen, but like, I mean, is there anything out there right now that tells me like, hey, you know, it's kind of like, you know, Augie Greeter used to say, expect the unexpected. And I kind of think that's how ADs think right now. And it's probably smart.
Nothing seems far-fetched I mean, can you
not
imagine?
Not at all.
Like you said, 5 years ago, you couldn't have imagined that we'd be where we are right now. When the the terms of the House settlement first came out, I think a lot of people thought that there were going to be 34 scholarships at every school. Yeah. They can certainly fund 34 scholarships if they want to. But it seems like in, you know, reading what you've written, we've had Ross Dellinger on our show, we've had Matt Brown on our show, and it seems like, you know, consistently across the board, the feel is that the SEC is going to land somewhere in the mid-20s is going to be the number that, that teams are going to fund in terms of scholarship. It's still more than 11.7, but it's not quite 34. Do you think this is going to be something where the school gets to choose it on a school-by-school basis? Or do you think the conference steps in and tries to have some sort of, you know, competitive equity to keep Vanderbilt from having 34 while Mississippi State has 24?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, here's the thing. I mean, if you're an SEC school and you're willing to do 34, like, and you look at what Vanderbilt historically has been able to do with the financial aid and things like that, mm-hmm. like, you know, if you're one of those schools, you're going to go, hey, wait a second. So we didn't put rules in place for that program for the last 20 years. But you're going to tell me that because, you know, Missouri or Kentucky or whomever doesn't want to give 34 scholarships, I can't give it. So I think the issue, you know, is, you know, from a conference standpoint is everything is delegated or everything is decided by the probability of a lawsuit. And if you're the SEC, if LSU wants to give 34 full rides in baseball, like, are they going to go, no, you know what, I know you have the money and you want to do it, but yeah, you can't do that because we're only allowing you to do 23, 24. So that to me is kind of the million-dollar question is, like, does the SEC go, hey, we're all going to do the same thing, or do they go, hey, you know, if Arkansas and LSU, which, I mean, I'm going to go out on a limb and say Arkansas and LSU would be two programs that would probably give 34 if they could. Mm-hmm. Or are you going to tell them they can't? I don't know if the SEC feels like they're in a position to do that in this current climate of college athletics. But, no, you're right. It is interesting that, you know, when it all came out, I think everybody just assumed, oh, 34 full rides. I think two things at play here. I think, one, I think this idea that mid-majors are getting totally hosed on this is crazy. I think the fact that, you know, you have 34 man roster down from 40 starting next year, you have more than 80 players from the SEC, ACC, Big 12, Big 10, Sun Belt, you know, in conferences like that, they have to go somewhere, right? And so I think that really bolsters a lot of mid-majors. I just think there's a trickle-down effect of this deal that benefits not only the bigger schools, but also the smaller schools.
Kendall Rogers of D1Baseball.com with us. There's going to be a 34-man roster cap. We do know that beginning, or we think we know that, beginning with the 2026 season. You know, you look at a roster like Arkansas right now, they've got 51 players on their fall baseball roster. This is going to be a huge adjustment, I would feel like, for the coaches who are accustomed to having too many players in the fall. You know, you cut eight, you might redshirt four or five others, and then you get down to your roster limit. This is an element of this that I think is maybe being overlooked a little bit, is the roster cap is going to be a big-time adjustment. And I wonder if there are going to be any type of is there going to be anything in place to where you say, you know, what if you have a couple of pitchers pop their elbow in the fall? And, you know, I mean, are you able to add people at the semester? This is kind of fascinating to me.
No, it really is. And you know, I've had several coaches. I had some scouts reach out to me the other day, ask me about that. And there's nobody knows an answer. You know, I even reached out to the SEC a couple of weeks ago. They are unsure at this point. I think you have to have something in place. I just don't think you can go into the fall going, hey, on, you know, if you're Dave Van Horn on August 1 or whatever, you know, September 1, you've got to have your roster set for the spring. I think that's kind of crazy. I'm with you. I mean, if you get three, four injuries in college baseball and you're on a 34 man roster, and let's say all of your injuries are on the mound, like you're in trouble before the season even starts. And so, you know, I had a scout bring up a really interesting kind of approach, is like the MLB approach, to where like you have a designated roster, but you can kind of add and drop guys from your active roster, you know, in the fall and also in the spring. So I think there has to be some safeguards put in play. You know, put in place there for these coaches, because like I said, I just don't think you can go in the fall with 34. And like you said a minute ago, there are programs like Arkansas, LSU, A&M that'll have, you know, 45 to 50 guys on the roster in the fall, and they kind of trim things down. So Nobody really knows, but I think I would be very surprised if there is not some sort of flexibility or, you know, slash cushion there from a roster standpoint.
I was talking to one of Arkansas's coaches several months ago, and they said, you know, can you imagine in 2023 when we had Jackson Wiggins get hurt at the beginning of the season, and they dealt with injuries all year. Mm-hmm. I mean, Jared Wagner was out for a while. Davion Josenberger was out for a long time. And there were many more people who watched that season remember it well. If they go into that season with 30 players, they're in real trouble when they get to the end of the SEC season. And so, that's definitely something worth watching.
Yeah, it can cost a coach's job.
Yeah, absolutely.
And something that's totally out of his control.
Because there's no more waiting anymore, right? I mean, you know, used to, like Arkansas, they would go to the World Series, and then they might be allowed to have a year where they only went to a regional, and they were a two-seed regional. There's nothing like that anymore. There's an expectation to stay competitive and stay at the top every single year.
I mean, I don't know about your Twitter feed, but I mean, after this season, I even had some Arkansas fans going like, hey, is it time to move on? I'm like, wait, what? Like, what are you talking about here? There's no such thing as any kind of honeymoon or vacation in college athletics, at least in college baseball at University of Arkansas.
People don't know how good they have it until it's gone. That's what I would say there.
Be careful what you wish for.
You've got Matt Hobbs as your assistant coach of the year this year.
Yeah.
This is like, you know, it's like if you're a football fan, obviously the Broyles Award is something that we give out here in Arkansas. This is like the equivalent of the Broyles Award for college baseball. What all did you see from him this year that you and your staff decided that he was the assistant of the year?
Well, you know, the one thing that we try to do with our assistant of the year award is we try to make it kind of a gradual climb to it. You know, any assistant can have one good year. But when you're consistently very good at, you know, from a statistical standpoint, you're very good at development. You've got a track record. You know, every single step of the way that Matt's had, he's had not only success, but a lot of success. And I think what they did this year on the mound was just magnified. I know a lot of people look at the end of the season and go, well, they ended the season, you know, not so great on the mound. But I mean, here's the thing. They you know, towards the end of the year, they're a little bit more hittable. But I mean, when you look at college baseball this year, from a statistical standpoint on the bump, it was very, you know, it was very offensive. So a lot of the numbers were not great. Mm-hmm. And then the one outlier for, you know, 99.9% of the season was Arkansas. They were, you know, very consistent top to bottom. You know, they had one of the top arms in the country in Hagan Smith. They had, you know, some of the top young arms in the country, Gabe Gackel kind of leading the way. Mm-hmm. And, you know, their staff ERA was much better than the number two team, you know, number two team in that list. So I just think the biggest thing for me was he's not only earned it because of what he's done along the way throughout his career, but, you know, icing on the cake, what he was able to do with that staff this year. Because, you know, again, you mentioned injuries a minute ago. It's not like they went into the season with no injuries. I mean, mm-hmm. they had some setbacks before the season. So I thought he did an incredible job yet again.
You've said that you think that he might be in line to be Arkansas's coach when Dave Van Horn moves on.
Yeah, it wouldn't shock me. I really think that just from talking to, you know, people close to the program, obviously a lot of people out there are going to say, oh, well, they're just going to go hire Tony Vitello. Well, I think Tony's in his last spot as a coach. I really do. I know he's kind of a young guy to say he's never going to leave Tennessee. But, you know, they're about to build a, you know, $100 million ballpark for him. You know, he's got a lot of family members that are Aggies. He turned down A&M this past summer. Now, you know, in 3 or 4 years, could he have a new AD? Could he have it fallen out with Danny White? Something like that, potentially. But I think if you're Arkansas, you've got a really good option in Matt Hobbs within that program, a guy that, you know, was a winner as a player, you know, at Missouri, has been a winner in every single stop that he's had as an assistant coach. And so I think that would actually be a pretty good hire. The question will be when the time comes that Dave Van Horn retires. And you know what? I hope DVH coaches for another 10 years. I don't know if he will. I hope he does because I love having him in the sport. But, you know, the thing that Arkansas will have as a challenge is it's an incredible job. It's an incredible fan base. It's an incredible facility. And they've got a lot of money. Mm-hmm. And so when that time comes, you know, do they go out there and try to, you know, at that point in college baseball, do they go get the next Tony Vitello, or will they stay in house and Matt Hobbs? That'll be the question for me. But is he worthy? Can he do it? I have zero doubt.
A couple of notable pitcher transfers for Arkansas this offseason. Kendall, you had Landon Beidelschies from Ohio State and Zach Root from East Carolina, both a couple of left-handers who could maybe find their way into the rotation.
Yeah.
Tell people about them who haven't seen them before.
Yeah, I think the big thing with Landon is it's just elite stuff, man. Like it's big time stuff. And you know, the big thing for him is I think especially under Matt, I think he's gonna get a lot more consistent. I think that was the one thing about him last year. I think people had some concerns just about the consistency factor. So I think he could be one of those guys that ends up being under Matt being a, you know, 2.5, 3.5 ERA kind of guy with big time strikeout numbers. Zach Root is the really fascinating one for me. I know one thing kind of going into the summer, at least, that schools were a little concerned about was the thumb. You know, he was a little banged up at the end of last year at ECU, mm-hmm. but when he is healthy, it's as good as it gets. It's a first round arm. It's really good breaking stuff. It's a good fastball. You know, he's a hard nosed guy. And so, you know, he learned in a program where, not being hard-nosed is not an option. And so he checked every single box, assuming he's healthy going in the spring. He's as good as the number one guys you're going to get in college baseball. So, I think both those guys are great additions. I think Root is probably, for me, is a safer bet to be kind of a big-time, arm from day one. But there's no doubt that Landon has that kind of upside as well.
Hoover's going to keep the SEC tournament for 4 years or more years. Is that the right place?
For now, I mean, here's the thing. I mean, there's no doubt that Arlington's kind of gone after it. And, you know, there is a reason, especially if every single team is making the SEC tournament, which is going to be the case moving forward. Being indoors probably makes more sense in that regard. But, I mean, here's the thing. Hoover, if you look at what they've done to the Met, did you go to the Met this past year?
I've been down there before.
Yeah, so this past year, they had redone the entire parking lot. They had redone the entire entrance. They had redone a lot of the inner workings of the ballpark. And so it looks really nice. And mm-hmm. so, yeah, especially from an Arkansas standpoint, even though there's been a lot more Hog fans go the last few years, it's not an easy place to get to. But, you know, it's a city, you know, I don't want to compare it to Omaha because it's not even close to Omaha. But, you know, it's a city that really has embraced that tournament. Mm-hmm. They get great crowds. You know, if you look back at last year, I want to say there were like 7 or 8 games that had 10,000-12,000 people. And you're just not going to get that anywhere else. You know, maybe Arlington, probably Arlington. But, you know, you don't get that intimate feel. So mm-hmm. I think as long as Hoover continues to put more money into that ballpark, and if you went there this past year as an Arkansas fan, you would notice that they had this massive, like, metal, like, blue SEC logo, like, literally etched into the ballpark. That tells me they're not going anywhere for a while.
Yeah, probably. So would Arlington – last one for you, Kendall. Would Arlington take the SEC over the Big 12 if the option was there?
Yes. Yeah. There's no doubt. I mean, I look back at last year when the Hogs played Oregon State and the fact that, you know, they had what, 20,000 people there. And mm-hmm. I mean, I'll give Oregon had 500 of that. So, you know, Arkansas had 19,500 people there. You know, A&M would have 19,000 people there. Texas would have 19,000 people there. LSU, they could be playing in an Anchorage, Alaska, and they would have 19,000 people there. So, you know, there are a lot of reasons to go to Arlington. There mm-hmm. really are. It's just a matter of, you know, I think from the SEC perspective, it's like you don't really have a great reason to leave Hoover mm-hmm. for now. You know, maybe if every single team's in the tournament, maybe, you know, and you get a lot of rain delays over the next couple of years, maybe it's like, hey, yeah, we need to make a move here. But for now, they're probably in the right spot.
Kendall, we appreciate your time, and hopefully we can get to talk to you a little bit more as the season gets
closer.
You got
it, buddy. Great talking to you, Matt. Thank you.
Thank you. Kendall Rogers of D1Baseball.com. And we appreciate you being with us today on our podcast. Again, we'll be back tomorrow with our Q&A with Arkansas football coach Sam Pittman.